Danny. I'm an alcoholic. I'm really glad to be here. Billy asked me to speak. My sponsor spoke out here, what, a few months ago? Will. And so I guess something about a hat he put my name in, and so here I am. And he did warn me about it, and I was supposed to have a riding partner today in my home group. Him and his son were sick, so I got some time to ride up here by myself, which was very nice. My sobriety date is August the 20th, 2015, and I have a home group and a sponsor. My home group is in Midlothian, Virginia. It's a men's step meeting. We go through the 12 and 12 and study that. 3 weeks we go through the book or the steps, and then the first Monday of the month we go through a tradition. And it's been an amazing home group to study that book. I love that book, and I love the big book as well. I'm not like a big book thumper, but I love going through, you know, we're studying that same book every week, and every week it's something different, and I really like that. And when I sponsor people in the big book, it's really cool how this book keeps coming alive and showing itself to me, and that's been an amazing thing, and it's really exciting. Today is completely different than I would have expected when I walked in here. So in a general way, I'll tell you what it's like. And then I've been told if I start rambling to quit, and I have no problem doing that. So I grew up, it's funny being out here, so I grew up in New Jersey. I'm 100% Irish, and we all came to the Bronx. And then by the time I was born, we moved to New Jersey. It was like 29 miles outside New York City. A very nice town, and my dad was, of all things, an FBI agent. He did organized crime in the city, and I had an amazing upbringing. It was a really cool upbringing. No major traumatic things as far as I'm concerned, so nothing too exciting there. The only thing, and I had everything I wanted or asked for, and I always felt like my town was the most boring town ever, you know, and nothing ever exciting happens here. But looking back, it was really, I couldn't have asked for a better life. I think when it came down to, other than having, like, you know, nothing traumatic, like, in my life, I think it really came to when I was in, like, fifth grade, I started noticing that, I wasn't picking up on things maybe as quick as other people were. And I'd have to go to, like, I'm not going to say doctors, but I guess they call it ADD or whatever. So I had a hard time paying attention. And I think looking back, it showed up at around fifth grade, maybe earlier, I think they knew. And then, you know, so I started noticing that I might not have been the same as everyone else, pretty early on. And so I think looking back, that's kind of where I felt some separation. And then going through, I think I had some middle school, I started being in the classes with like two teachers or like a teacher and an aide. And, I liked it. I didn't really see anything. I don't know that I felt too different, you know, because it was helpful. But looking back, I did feel that separation. And, I didn't get in any trouble in school because I had all that extra assistance. I played a lot of sports and was very active in everything I did, and things were really good. When I started, and for some reason I was attracted to just things. It's like I had these two lives. I loved doing sports and just being that good kid, but I also was attracted to smoking cigarettes. And my dad drank. He's actually sober now, something like 13 years. But he was not what I would, he wasn't, I have no memories of him being a mean or nasty drunk. He was just your old school Vietnam guy and FBI agent, you know. But so there's no memories of that, but there was a lot of drinking. And every weekend, if there was a party, we knew if my dad was starting to yell and people were laughing, the party had just started. So there was a cool connection with, like, that means I'm staying and hanging out with my friends. So I don't have any, like, negative, I didn't see anything, a problem with drinking. Dad was always the funny one in the whole group. And it was fun to go out, you know, with the baseball team. So I saw nothing wrong with drinking, and I was attracted to, like, I had these two lives, like I said. So, like, cigarettes were attractive to me, and drinking when I can get to it was just something that seemed okay. I have no memory of, like, my first drunk being anything ridiculous. You know, my first drink was just probably something that was just as attractive as that cigarette. Drugs are in my story. I will keep them very brief because I do respect the traditions. But at the end of the day, drinking was mainly my problem. So I, you know, I had the, played sports. I was in the Boy Scouts. And on the other side, I was smoking cigarettes and started messing around before alcohol. It was a lot of marijuana. And it was about, you know, got through. Started high school in West in Jersey, and then we moved. I'm one of four. We moved to Richmond. You know, it was expensive. My dad wanted to retire to more affordable to afford us college. So we moved down to Richmond, and I was a junior in high school. and I was one who wanted to move. I really wanted to move more than any of my other. So my brother and sister were a little younger. It wasn't as different for them. Moved here and things were just completely different, not what I expected. I went to there's townships in Westfield and it was very small and I knew everyone all throughout. So it was just like complete shock. People spoke a little different and it was just different. So I really isolated a lot more than, and I was in different classes here too. So I didn't make any friends the last 2 years of high school. Which seemed fine because I wanted to drink and get high, you know. And college just never, there was never any type of, and it didn't even look like it could happen for me. So I don't even necessarily look back and, you know, wonder what would have been because I struggle with tests. I struggle with schooling, right? So after high school, I was staying at my parents, and they were cool. You know, they knew that college probably wouldn't have been for me, but they also knew that, you know, they were kind of stopping me from being able to drink the way I wanted to, and do what I wanted to. And at 18, I knew everything. Well, at 16, I knew everything. Probably before that, but you know, I knew everything, and so. At the end of the day, I wanted to do what I wanted to do. And, you know, I had some jobs and we got in an argument. Probably they found my weed or whatever it might have been. And I moved out into the country in Cumberland County. And it was great. It was like this place, you know, where I could do whatever I wanted to do. I could go to work and I could drink the way I wanted to drink. Because at this point, 18, 19 is when I started drinking and blacking out. And that's when I found that connection with alcohol, which is what I really liked. I fit in, and it just made me feel alive. You know, it was awesome. And the drugs were secondary. Like alcohol was always involved. And I just loved like that country life. I just didn't grow up like that. And it was cool. You know, people would come over and if you're out there cutting the grass, I just thought it was a really cool, friendly place. And people were getting loaded, and that's what I liked, you know? We lived right by the river, and it seemed like it just was a really good place. Looking back, I positioned exactly that so I can drink the way I wanted to, and I can go into the city. I didn't know that at the time, so this journey has been really cool to as time goes on, to see why maybe I did some of these things. But it was hard. I was absolutely got everything I wanted and a spoiled kid. And so I'd worked. My first job was doing tree work out there, and it felt great. You know, work really hard and then drink at the end of the day. And then somebody told me something about moving some bricks, toting brick for a guy, a bricklayer. And I went, and that was like the craziest day of my life. I came home, I was like, man, the Marines, I got nothing on this, right? It was really hard work, but I liked it. I liked the guys, I was friends with them before I went to work with them. And I just liked the, you know, staying in shape and working really hard. I got good satisfaction out of that. and we could say whatever we wanted. It wasn't like a business atmosphere, and that was really attractive to me. But like I said, so I was spoiled. So like I wasn't making enough money to pay for my car, my car insurance. So I could call my parents, my mom definitely by way of dealing with the Irish Catholic, enabling, whatever it is, my mom would give me money if I needed it, you know, early on. And I think at that point I was still, you know, I wasn't spending my money great, but I wasn't, you know, I was spending it. I wasn't doing what I should have been either. So anyway, you know, it was years of back and forth. I'd move back to my parents' house, and that just wouldn't work out for too long because I couldn't drink exactly how I wanted to. But it was hard for me to pay and live the way I wanted to get loaded as possible, and that got expensive. So I could move out and move back. So, you know, I you know, I like living there. It was free, right? But it turns out I like to get as loaded as possible, and I just didn't act right, you know. I would drink. If I drank, I could not stop drinking. I didn't want to. I would take the drink to bed with me, and most of the times I wouldn't remember anything. So it seemed to work well out in the country. I had those two lives I talked about. I could come to the city and see the family, and that was fine. And I didn't care as much if I blacked out. It's like if I blacked out and did something stupid, I could hang out with this set of friends. You know, it seemed like I strategically could have certain crews of people to hang out with at certain times because I didn't want to hear. You know, I turned my phone off. I never woke up not remembering what happened and heard how good I did or what a nice guy I was. It just wasn't me. And I didn't like that, you know. I liked being, alcohol made me feel like I was a funny guy. It gave me the attention and I was the loud talker, you know, and it did not click that I was probably annoying. You know, I thought it was great. It just it made me feel alive, and so it was cool to have those different groups of crew of people that I could go hang out with when I would, you know, do something stupid, and it would just take a day or two, and I'd be like, oh, that was old news, and I could go hang out with whomever, and it was funny at that point. But that next morning, I just never felt great about it. So you know, it's never. I am grateful for drugs because I don't know that drugs really sped up this process for me. You know, I don't know how long I would have continued the drinking thing. That's a slow progression. I got sober well after the expiration dates. Things stopped working years ago. And I held on to, you know, I didn't know that it wasn't working. It's all I knew at that point. And I told you I liked it. You know, I could tell you I was happy. So for that reason, I am grateful. I don't know what that would look like if it was just drinking for me. I'm very slow to learn still to this date in sobriety. But, you know, things are better. Things are a lot clearer today. You know, I definitely did not come into this program with any conception of God, except for I could absolutely argue that fact to anybody that God wasn't real. And I enjoyed doing that. I enjoyed arguing anything. I really probably could have been a lawyer. I loved debating everything. And, you know, my parents would always say that. So as far as consequences go, you know, I got my first DUI at 21. My parents picked me up and they, you know, they weren't happy. And I looked at them. I was like, everybody gets a DUI, you know. I remember nothing of that night. Absolutely nothing. And I looked at them absolutely like, this is what our family does, you know. There's a lot of alcoholics in my family. There's a lot of successful, really nice people in my family. I have an amazing family, but there is a lot of, as I said, I'm 100% Irish. So there's a lot of alcoholics, excuse me. But, so that was my first run in with, well, that's not true, but that was my first run in with alcohol. I got caught stealing, from like a 7-Eleven tobacco products. And that was, you know, I was just attracted to the wrong thing, right? Jerry Garcia and Jim Morrison were my idols from an early age. I don't know why that was. Today, it's not necessarily the case. I look for more goal-oriented people. But So, you know, that was nothing. My parents got me out of it. My parents paid for me to go, you know, for the ASAP or whatever it was. It was just like anything else. They took care of it. So got one DUI and continued doing what I was doing, right? And at this point, I had been in the brick pile for a few years. And I was like, well, this is dead-end job. And I would leave just like anything. Those jobs are really great, too, because you can show up loaded. You can show up and tell a good story and entertain the guys. That really where I was always small companies, you know, family-owned. And so that worked well for me because I could miss a day and tell them I got loaded. And that's fine, you know. And I still work. I still do. I'm back in the brick pile again. And that's what people are doing today, you know. And I think my job interview was, are you breathing and can you get here somewhat legally, you know. And that's crazy. But I feel like I should get a raise just because I'm early every day, because that's not the case with everyone else. And it feels really good. But so nothing, you know, things were just going the way they were going. I wasn't making enough money because I was spending all my money on alcohol and whatever else might have happened after I had a few drinks in me. That was normal to me. You know, sometimes I'd go home, get some food, and it was the way I lived. And I had some friends I could eat at their house too. So it wasn't anything like I grew up, but it became normal and I enjoyed it. Or at least I'd have told you I enjoyed it or thought I did. At about 25, and I loved being single because I could not hold a relationship. I did crazy things the few times. So if I was with a girl, it'd be like a week, or I'd let them know. You know, it just did not, it didn't fit. That definitely, I could not drink the way I wanted to because I always did something crazy. So I remained single from, you know, 19 till 20, about 25, and I met a girl out in Cumberland, and she was cool, and she had two kids. I was like, well, I couldn't bring her home to my parents. And so we hung out like I did with whomever, and I started living with her, and, you know, I was like, well, we're not going to be together. and it ended up, I started to fall in love with her. She was a really nice person. Again, there, I just couldn't see, you know, telling my parents I'm with this woman who's got two kids. And she was like 8 years older than me. So she was like 31. So it was a good time. Long story short, we were together for 10 years. So I'm just going to fast forward to things were crazy when I was about, and she was, to avoid the drugs, she was more into, or she had some doctor's prescriptions, and that's what started off. Something else that was like, it was like, I love drinking, but I also did not like waking up and not knowing what I did. So I got involved with her, who I loved, right? But it just didn't go well. And it was about 31 when I first got arrested for, you know, stealing money from my parents. So I spent about 6 months in the Henrico jail, and I went into this drug program. So that was my first time really knowing about the program, right? That's what they call it in, or the 12 steps, but it's just a bunch of inmates, and I'm supportive of anything. It at least introduced me to the steps, right? So I knew the steps, right? You had to memorize the 12 steps to go on to the next phase of the program, and cool, I know the steps, you know. Never, looking back, nobody ever told me anything about doing the steps or what that looked like, or, you know, the book was here, but I didn't read it. And really, if I could have read this book myself and gotten sober, it'd be different. But I didn't have that ability. And I'm just grateful to have a sponsor who read it with me. But so got out of jail, did exactly the same thing. But I said to myself, I was like, I'm just going to do this one night and then go get sober. Because I realized I could sleep and be sober when I finally got locked up. And it was actually like, I always thought I needed a doctor prescription to calm my brain. And that wasn't the case. Jail was somehow nice, right? I hadn't lived like carefree in a while. It was very chaotic, very hectic and exhausting living the life I was living. And it was clean. Like I had a clean, I had like a little area. And as crazy as that sounds, I enjoyed that. And there was some structure. Just get out of jail, and I think I stayed out of jail for a year. And things were crazy. I stole some more money from my parents. I wasn't like a guy who's gonna steal from just whatever, right? I stole from my parents. And that time I ended up getting 15 months in the old city jail. And that was, you know, at this point, at first I was like, that's crazy. But it was another time where I was like, man, this isn't that bad. As crazy as that sounds, that's what my drinking and whatever took me to. Where it was a nice break. I remember, as chaotic as it would be, I'd be like, man, I just wish I could go to jail for a few days to calm down. I used to always just think that drinking or whatever, if I could just get away from it for 3 days, that was the problem. I thought the drink was the problem. I did not know anything about the first step, which was slowly broken down to me and finally made sense. So I went to that, you know, the jail, they had the program there or whatever. And I just, you know, for whatever reason, I wasn't ready to listen or hear. And all the while, when I was getting locked up, I had the girlfriend on the other end. So she was taking my phone calls. I knew I had a place to go. At this point, my parents were not thrilled with me. They said, stop giving me money, right? Because I was stealing from them. And you know, they really weren't a fan. They thought that Naomi was the one, the reason I was doing what I was doing. That's not the case. So at the end of it, I got out of jail, and she ended up dying due to drugs a year before I got sober. So 2014, she ended up dying as a result of this disease. And I was living in a hotel with her, and that was crazy because we had both died several times. And so when she died, I'm looking at the, you know, in the hospital, like, how could this happen? You know, that's so nuts that it happened. I knew people constantly dying, but it just couldn't have happened to me. It happened to me several times. And so she, when she died, I was just like, I couldn't believe it, you know. And things got crazy for that last year. And on the anniversary of her death, she died on the 13th. And things were just crazy. I couldn't believe a year had went. Nothing had changed. And I had went to like a detox center right before. I had to pee. I had to try and, you know, give them a clean urine at the PO. So I went to this detox center for a few days. So I knew about this treatment center. And I had run out. I still had places to live. I was not homeless, but I was tired. And I saw on Facebook, like, people were, you know, saying how, you know, this was a beautiful woman who had two kids, you know, and it was just really sad, right? So I was just tired, and I saw that on Facebook, and I was like, I need to go somewhere. You know, and I went to the treatment center. I did not call my parents. I didn't call anybody and tell them, like, hey, look at me. I'm in treatment. You know, I just went, and you know, detox wasn't a fun place, but it was like, you know, looking back, I was just so exhausted of the way I was living. And I was glad. I didn't want to go back to jail. I didn't ever want to die. I hear a lot of people talking like that. I enjoyed drinking so much. I didn't want to miss that. I don't have, as bad as things got, I was just really depressed. But really, I was only depressed if I didn't have what I wanted. If I had what I wanted, everything was fine. So, And that's a long, you know, struggle, and it's exhausting. So by the time I got to treatment, you know, I had some knowledge of the 12 steps. My dad got sober a few years before that, had gotten us the book. I think I read part of it drunk. And it's like, I just wanted to look at the book and find the answer. Cause I'm somebody who wants instant gratification, you know, something has to happen right away. For me, I have to see results for it to work. But finally, other than jail that and my dad getting sober and obviously knowing about AA, I don't remember necessarily as I was absolutely against God, but I do not remember coming into that treatment center necessarily too worried about God, like I hear people say. And so, you know, first 30 days you're in that treatment center, that was like, it's long term. So it was like 9-13 month treatment center. And, you know, it was really cool. It was the first time other than jail that I was around guys that seemed to want, not everyone was there for the same reason, but seemed to be happy and were trying to get sober. And my story wasn't anything too ridiculous. I did feel like my story might have been worse because, you know, I had somebody that was real close with die. And so I didn't feel like I was any better or any different, but I just felt like there was a lot going on with me. I did not go in there, you know, looking for a relationship. But so I was introduced to, you know, that treatment center, their rules. First 30 days, you were doing, you know, what they wanted. And looking back at it, I'm really grateful to have that separation. I don't think I could have just come into AA, seen you guys smiling, successful working. I think I would have identified out real quick, and then I'd have broke down the God thing. So I'm really glad that I had that place to go to with people and just kind of defog for the first month. And you know, that's a treatment center. It's not, this is how come I'm sober, right? But that place housed me, so I'm really grateful for it. And I was going to church every Sunday, and that's where I met Will, my sponsor. He had just asked me a question after Mass, you know, where I was staying at. And I told him, and, you know, he's like, oh, I'm in AA, you know. So we started, that was kind of like, you know, some other things that happened where I was not debating the God issue at this point. So I was like a month sober. And I was nervous as heck to ask him to sponsor me. I'm asking people, you know, but I knew there was a reason we met, you know. He's from New York, but it just, we're not the same necessarily, right? We don't have the exact same story. But so I asked him to sponsor me, and that was just a weird thing for me to ask somebody, just like they tell me to get these numbers and talk to people. And it just felt so weird to me. And like pretty much everything in my life, everything I think of was wrong, right? I mean, that's like one of the coolest things, a newcomer coming up and talking to you. But I was so in my head, it just was such a foreign thing. And what else was foreign was after he said yes, and, you know, the common, are you willing to do anything, you know, and the standard things we say, and I was like, man, my hands are up, what do you got, you know, along with the assistance of that place. You know, it was very foreign to me. Somebody that drove a nice car, taking time out of their day, 1 hour, maybe an hour and a half a week. And I just took that really seriously. Like, I thought that was just crazy that somebody was coming to a treatment center to meet with me. And that's where we really, you know, we started opening the book. And that's where things took a completely different turn. Then, you know, the treatment center was different. There's a lot of rules there, and you know, my sponsor really, he's been around a little bit, and he definitely, you know, I tell him something that went on today, he's like, I could care less what you're doing there, you know. And that was really important for me, really important that I saw that, like, whatever I was doing there had nothing to do with AA, nothing. And I'd be like, oh, yeah, we got this meeting on Saturday night. He's like, that's not an AA meeting, you know. And at first I'd be like, man, what's he talking about? But I now know, you know, it was a mandatory meeting, you know. So when we went through the book, or when we opened the book, you know, he was asking me, because there were some drugs in my story. He's asking me, well, you know, about alcoholics. And I, you know, like, we'd go back and forth, and I was like, I don't think this guy thinks I'm an alcoholic. And it's just, I couldn't believe it. You know, I was like, man, you heard my story. Of course I'm an alcoholic. But he really wanted to drill into me, you know, about the physical allergy and the mental obsession and my life not being unmanageable because I kept getting kicked out of places. I was unmanageable because I couldn't control the way I drank, you know. And so we took, I'd say, a few weeks on the first step. And he really went slow with the first step. There was nowhere I was going anyway, so we went slow through all the steps. And he would, you know, we'd read like a paragraph and stop, and he would talk. And at first, I was like, man, this guy's not, other than hearing my story that first week, I barely did any talking. And I like to talk, right? So, like, I'd be like, man, this guy's just cutting me off right away every hour. And, you know, at first I just didn't know how to take it, but he, you know, he'd get excited and he'd break this thing down pretty much paragraph by paragraph. If two paragraphs went past, it was a miracle. He would stop all the time and tell me about the history. He brought, like, he went to the grave where you know, over in England, you know, and showed me the picture. He, you know, he was excited about this thing. He'd been sober a long time. And it was really cool. So as far as the first step went, that took a long time to break down. The second step, at that point, some cool things had happened where I met my sponsor. Just some other really, really amazing things happened. And he broke it down pretty simple. He's like, because we met in church. And that was the first time I had cried when I went to Mass one day. And I just had cried. Even when Naomi died in my arms, I didn't cry. There was no, that's hard to say. But I just didn't cry. It's like I had just separated from everything. But, he basically asked me, he's like, do you believe that I believe in a power greater than myself? And I was like, absolutely. That's easy. That was super easy because, I had no problem believing that. And at that point, the third step really wasn't that difficult because, like, as in the 12 and 12, it's just a key to open the door, and I had started going to Mass, and I didn't know what I was praying to. I remember doing the third step prayer with him in this little kitchenette, and we got on our knees, and I remember getting up and looking out the window. There's like a little window to see if somebody walked by. I was just embarrassed. I was like this, here I am. They say don't make any changes in the first year, but I'm going to give my will and life to God. That's a pretty major change. And now I'm on my knees in a kitchenette, but that was my first thought. This was no moment. It was like, who saw that, but I was still, I was excited, but still like embarrassed or whatever. So get to the fourth step. I was like, by the way, he's like, here you go. He broke down the columns, this and that. And I was like, by the way, those resentments I've pretty much ironed them out. I remember my major resentment up to like date was like my parents paid for my brother and sister's college all the way throughout. And I didn't want to go to college. I was like, if they had just given me the 40 grand, I'd be fine. So I remember being resentful that they didn't just give me whatever number it might be, food, probably over 40 grand. And so that was like this crazy resentment. Well, anyway, I'm telling, well, man, that was my number one resentment. I was like, that was silly, right? Why would they give me that money? I stole more than that. So anyway, he's yelling at me, just write. I didn't see any major point in it. But I got to writing, I think I was as honest. I was more scared to drink. I was scared to death of drinking. And I heard a lot of people in that treatment center saying, like, I didn't do an honest four step, fifth step, And I was so scared of what might happen. I was writing just stupid things on paper. But I was writing, I was just like trying to rack my brain, like, what am I missing? I was so scared because things were really good, And at this point, my parents knew I was in a treatment center. Everyone knew. They were supportive. I was not an in-and-out kind of guy other than jail. So I was as honest as I could be on my first four step. And then when we did our fifth step, we drove actually out to, he was just driving. I don't think that he does not recommend me doing that with my sponsees. But, he drove and I spoke, and I felt so silly saying some of those things. When it came to my part, I really didn't have a problem. I don't have anything too traumatic. Things that have come to light as time has gone on, especially with that relationship. I gave him what I had, and it was as thorough as it could be, I didn't know anything about it. He's like, all right, get out a pen and paper. And I did that, and he gave me my character defects. I was like, all right, and he said, go home. We'll sit quietly for an hour, which I think I did 15 minutes. I couldn't sit for an hour. I just couldn't do it. And I was scared of that. I was like, man, I can't even sit for an hour. This is crazy, but the book talks about it. I was not floating. I didn't feel like I was walking through some archway, but I was happy to have done it and kind of felt a part of at this point with I was doing something. So then I had the character defects. He told me to look them up in the dictionary, and it was six, and then seven, it was prey on everyone. Didn't do that great, but six and seven were sweet in the book. I was like, all right, this is pretty cool. Just did a major thing. And what's cool about my home group is a lot of people have that same experience too with six and seven, which are huge in my life right now. But to get through the steps, because things were going good, I wasn't like like super stoked to go make these amends, but I wanted to get through the steps. I was so scared of drinking. So 6 and 7 were pretty easy. I don't struggle with them today. There's problems. And they're showing up now. I mean, I did my fifth step. I didn't have a job. I didn't have a phone. I didn't have a bill to pay currently. So where were my character defects? I was in a treatment center going to meetings. So you can tell me anything, but they weren't showing up necessarily. And they show up today. You know, I'm married. And I have a 20-year-old foreman. So they show up, you know, and that's just, it is what it is. So, you know, I'm glad I still have that piece of paper. But you could just look it up on internet, whatever a character defect is, and I got it. You know, so I'm definitely revisiting 6 and 7 daily. Not, you know, not daily, but they're there. And I'm absolutely, you know, when things get really bad, you know, my sponsor or anybody I talk to in recovery is not co-signing. And I'm well aware of it. I don't even present it the way I used to present things. So that was 6 and 7 and still to date on them. 8 was, you know, I owed, I think, all the courts, it was somewhere around $23,000 to $25,000. I hadn't had a license in 10 years, and I had gotten 3 DUIs. So for me, 8 was cool. The family, me and Naomi had positioned. I was not around anybody the last few years. So yes, I had hurt them, but there was not many people that were in my life at that point. So for me, it was a lot of financial amends. I didn't have too much fear with too many of my family or friends, that part of it. But it was really important. It's like, no matter how I break it down, my head was like a messy room, right? And until he had me get out index cards and I had to call, you can't just call a courtroom and be like, how much do I owe you? You have to call general district, circuit. And it was all the counties around, you know? And it took a lot. And then I got my credit report and he looked at it. He's like, what is this? I was like, I don't know. I guess they gave me money. You know, he just didn't understand that. I don't think that we didn't have that same thing. If somebody would have given me money, a credit card, I'd spend it. So I owed a lot of money. At least when I got done with those phone calls, it felt decent to have a number. I did not feel good about things. I wasn't even working at the time. And there was no way I was going to pay it off. But so at this point, after finding out all that financial stuff, I was more than happy to get in front of some people. And that process was actually amazing. You know, just for example, with my brother, I thought he'd be I didn't think he'd necessarily want the money back. I was prepared to give him money. But, you know, at the end of that, I'd say my spiel and I wanted to clean my side of the street. And I'd say, well, is there anything I left out? You know, and that was a really important thing for me to say. And I walked into that praying, as my sponsor told me, you know, if I bring God in, and really good things could happen, but say what I say and just shut up. And that was really important because that's a character defect that, like, just I need to be able to do that and listen. I don't listen well. I got, like, an absolutely different thing. I think my brother, one of the things that he had told me, he was like, it was more hurtful being around Thanksgiving and Christmas and my mom crying around the prayer and me not being there. And so I was so shocked that that's what affected him more than the money or me burning him, you know? And that was, like, so amazing to hear that. And as time has gone on, I see the direct, you know, what I did didn't just hurt that person. It's that butterfly effect. And that's a really humbling experience to, you know, have my brother say that. And every amends, direct amends I've made, it has gone pretty much different than I had expected, and really well for me. I'm blessed to go through the 12 and 12. And when we get to the 8th and 9th step, every, you know, a few months, it gets brought up again. I'm like, yeah, I got to do that one, you know. So I keep current where, you know, I haven't, and I need to talk to my sponsor. Even talking about it right now, it's like, man, I need to talk to him about one or two, you know, still. But I'm blessed to have paid off, you know, slowly, the financial stuff. And I got my license back. I paid that, breathalyzer thing. You know, so it was a lot of money I paid. And at this point, I should say, so I was like about a year and a half sober. And we got pulled over at a meeting. And no, leaving a meeting for a headlight because the treatment center was in the ghetto. And, you know, I had no problem showing them my ID. You know, yeah, man, I'm sober a year. They ran my name and I had two warrants out for me. For possession of a firearm as a felon. I had pawned my friend's guns. I had taken them and I had pawned them. And they didn't get reported stolen because I was like, oh, man, yeah, I did that. And he understood. He was an enabler, right? So he didn't report them stolen. But somehow along the way, a detective had known my name. And, you know, I'm not supposed to touch a gun. So I got arrested. And I was like, man, that's crazy. At this point, also, I did not take the suggestion of getting in a relationship because I did that, you know? And that story still ends well because I'm married to this day. But I met somebody, and I just bring it up because we're still married. So I met this woman, and I had been sober a year and some change. And I was living with her at this point. Or no, I was I'm bad with times, but we were together a while. I got arrested. It was right at Thanksgiving a few years ago. And I got out on a bond, and I had found out I was at work. She's like, you know, 2 or 3 days later. So I made Thanksgiving. It was crazy. And then she told me she was pregnant. And I was like, man, that's crazy. So here we are, happy as could be. Things are amazing. And the numbers were 5 to 7 years. And this girl is not in the program. She's an extremely self-dependent woman, right? And she knows not much other than her brother is a drug addict and an alcoholic. She, you know, here I am. It didn't look good for me. And I'm like, she's like, she doesn't understand the law. I know the law because I've been around it. So anyway, that was a long year, you know, just going back and forth with my sponsor. Like it started not looking like 5 years, but there was absolutely no way I was getting out of this one, right? So I took the position of like, you know, if I get locked up, I can be a good example and help people, right? I was pretty confident I might get like a year or two. But at this point, I was like, man, you know, this girl's not going to stay with me. And I've made it this long, what, 36 now with no kids, which I wanted to have kids. So anyway, by the time court came around, I didn't think I was going to be around for his birth because court was X amount of time and he was getting ready to be born. So anyway, you know how court goes in high court, you can put it off, whatever might happen. So I ended up getting put off until after he was born. Like the next court date was a month after he was born. So I got to see my son be born. Most amazing thing ever. And at this point, I wasn't too worried, but I knew something was going to happen. And it was just hard to understand. But I took on the response, like in my head, I was like, well, there's people that, you know, serve our country who aren't around their kids. So instead of just like being worried, which I was naturally, but I took on a different approach than I probably would have. You know, I was like, man, not everybody gets to be around their kids, around, especially like right now, you know, there's people fighting overseas. So I took that approach. So I ended up getting, you know, a nice fine, like always. I got 7 months home incarceration. They wanted to give me a plea deal, like 6 months in jail. I was like, absolutely not. I'm fighting this because I was sober and I'd been sober a while and I was serious about this thing. So anyway, I had like, you know, I think I had like 35 people show up in that courtroom for me, for my home group, and just, you know, solid AA members who knew. It wasn't like treatment people. These were all home group members, solid AA members who knew the deal, you know. And it was a powerful thing, you know, like the judge, he gave me 7 months home incarceration where I could go to work, and it cost like, I had an ankle monitor, it was like $15 a day, you know, it's expensive. And you know, I had a 1 month old son, but there was more people, there was not even a funeral for Naomi when she died, you know. I remember my parents had just moved down to like Myrtle Beach area. 3 days before she died, I called. I was like, Naomi died. And she was like, I was like, you gotta come up. And they're like, yeah, no. You know, there was no service, no anything. And her kids had moved away at that point. So So I was doing the home incarceration thing, you know, it was all right. You know, it is what it is. It kind of was, it wasn't great. Like, here I am at this point, 2 years sober now, and I'm checking in and I'm still peeing in a cup and I'm still reporting to these miserable. If you've ever been to jail or around deputies, they're not happy. You know, I don't know if they're underpaid. They're not pleasant people. And I'm a convict. And it's just like being in jail. You don't get anything. And you don't need to be nice to me, but it's not a pleasant thing. And I was so happy to be done with all that, but I wasn't. So here I am, doing what I got to do. And it was like, I think I had like 3 more months left, and my son was about 6 months old, and he passed away. Real tough, in the middle of the night. And so that's coming up on 2 years on the 19th of next month. It'll be 2 years that he died. And that's just part of my story. You know, I don't want you to feel bad for me. It sucks, you know. But that was something that, you know, what can you do, right? I know my sponsor came right over, and if you've ever been involved in that, the cops come, and it was kind of like an interrogation thing, you know, and that was a hard day, and, you know, as time has gone on, this was a hard month, really, the holidays, but, you know, I stayed with the steps. I finished, you know, I kept on doing what I do, with 10, 11, and 12, you know, I'm married, so that inventory is pretty, we'll take that. And one thing that happened when my son died was I didn't go the other way with God. I don't know why things happen, right? But my home group came. We had a meeting at my apartment a few days afterwards. And the turnout for his funeral was like, it was huge, you know? And it was just this crazy time where I've got this AA life and all these, you know, good people, but my wife doesn't have, she's a stay-at-home mom. We've got an 8-year-old too, which she does. And you know, we weren't married at this time. So anyway, it was hard, like going in that room where for me, I can go to an AA meeting and not feel good, but I had this, you know, drinking was never a thought, or doing anything was never a thought. You know, God has absolutely removed the obsession to drink for me. That has 100% happened, and I keep doing what I'm doing because I'm scared to death that I might not be that way. But to date, whatever has happened in sobriety, it has not been a thought to drink. I had these two lives where she, you know, I'd have to go in that room. I hate saying it like that, but I'm terrible at being an adult. You know, the 12 and 12 talks about being childish and grandiose, and that was me. You know, what am I? I'm going on like 15 or 16 now, if you count the years. So it's a miracle that I'm even married, and she's patient enough with me. But to deal with something like that, that is hard on a relationship. Very difficult. And, you know, you can question a lot of things. It's difficult, right? And we made it through that. That was not a planned pregnancy, and we're blessed to have, at this point, you know, planned a pregnancy. And I have a son now. My son that died, his name was Ryan Patrick, and I have a son who turned 1 on December 3rd, and his name is Nolan Patrick. And so, you know, it's been a few years. It's been a crazy journey, and I can promise that journey, for what it's like bringing home a newer baby after having lost one, has been nuts. You know, but I, just like anything that's happened, you know, I can't save anybody, but I have the experience of staying sober. And that's a powerful thing. Like, I can say, you don't have to drink over this, you know. And in this room and in this program, somebody's experienced something. And that's a really amazing thing to be able to do that. You know, I the people I can call today have experience. The guy I was going to ride with, he's got 2 kids. I'm calling him constantly. Like, how do you do this? You know, I'm not worried about drinking, but I want to be a good example. I want to do something right. And it's all, if anybody's a parent here, it's all a learning experience. So, and not being the most patient, you know, with that, the marriage, things are absolutely crazy. I called my sponsor yesterday just to tell him, like, what was going on with family, with this, that, and the third. And I was like, man, I'm sorry to be calling you, you know, with all this stuff. I said, but it's what's going on. And he's like, but you're not the problem today. And I was like, you're right. I'm not the problem today. I do not have the answers for all these people, but I can be a good example and I can listen. And I was not able to show up for years and years and years, forever, until I got sober. So because of this program, you know, I'm learning. I'm absolutely still willing to learn. You know, looking back, it was like my hands were up. I was not homeless, but I was so tired and so scared of what would happen if I didn't do this work and continue to do this work. And then when I go through the book with other people, it's such an amazing thing. It's like the book comes alive in a completely different experience than when Will was going through it with me. And it's like, you know, I get excited about it. I don't have like this awesome memory. So when I'm reading it, I'm like, man, this is so awesome. I'm looking across the table. I'm like, how awesome is this? And they're looking at me like, yeah, cool. You know, probably the same way I was, but I'm even more excited. And you know, sometimes, a lot of times I feel like I'm not doing great at AA because of what AA has given my life. You know, I feel bad sometimes because my wife is supportive of this, but she's a stay-at-home mom, so I struggle. I want to do more for AA, right? But if I didn't have my family, I'd be sitting in AA like, man, I sure do want what that guy's got, the wife and the kids. So I still can be that cow that's like got his head stuck in the fence eating that grass on the other side. Like, it's got to be better, you know? But I can put myself, you know, if I'm talking to the right people, they're going to absolutely tell me where I should be. And it's all because of God, you know. I remember the day that I was like, damn, God's the answer. And I think you read it every day, you know. And that's how slow I am. And it's important for me to continue to come here and listen, because I'm not a great listener. So today was a great ride out here because it was quiet. And I, you know, I needed that time. So other than my commute to work, that's the quiet I got. But I'm really glad to be here. I'm glad you guys are here. It's getting ready to be the busy season in AA. You know, the first of the year. And I want to be there to, you know, be a good example. And you know, if somebody asks me, you know, I want to give them my phone number and I want them to call me. As most of the time they call me right when I walk in the house, you know. But it's a beautiful thing to come an hour and 45 minutes. And this program has saved my life, and I want to do as much as I possibly can and just be a good person, a good example, and continue to grow and absolutely continue my relationship with God, because that's exactly why I'm sober. So thank you for having me here.